Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're back to do the Season 4, Episode 2 feedback episode. Aaron, I hear there is quite a bit of feedback today.
There's a good amount of feedback today. The Stranger Things feedback we got was insane, almost Game of Thrones level. But so in comparison, not as much, but still a healthy amount. Should we get right to it?
Sure, whenever you're ready.
Because I don't have any new pet theories to talk about, and there's plenty of stuff to get into the feedback, so I'm going to get right to Anne Louise. It says, good to see you guys again. I just finished listening to the feedback podcast for Season 4, Episode 1 of Westworld, and I'm surprised the two artistic allusions did not come up. First, you talked about Christina and Dolores being a painter, and you said the phrase Christina's worlds about a dozen times, but I don't remember any discussion of the famous Wyeth, not Wyeth, but close, painting Christina's world. It's housed at the MoMA in New York City. Yeah, we were a week late to that discourse that we talked about a little bit on the instant take, but Anne Louise here has some background information. The title of the episode, it might not be a nod or might just be a nod to fortune telling via birds, but I would guess it's referring to William Blake poem Auguries of Innocence. The themes of the poem are appropriate to say to released. Remember these violent delights? Well, here's how the poem ends. Every morn and every night, some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to endless night. We are led to believe a lie when we see not through the eye, which was born in a night to perish in a night. When the soul slept in beams of light, God appears and God is light to those poor souls who dwell in night, but does a human form display to those who dwell in realms of day. Are we sure this isn't a Kanye West lyric? This seems like late stage Kanye.
It might be. I thought it was a beat poem.
I was gonna say, it's like I just give me drop a sick beat on this and let me do something with it.
She says,
see what I mean? By the way, through in this context is usually pronounced and used to mean through, not throw. I was like, did I fuck that up? And I went, no, I did it right. No, it definitely seems like it's thematic to what they're doing with Westworld. Do you have any commentary on it, Jim?
I don't. This is one of those things that, like, you notice and you appreciate, but you're not sure if it has any real predictive power, right?
Talked
about that a few times.
Yeah.
They do this all the time. So yes, it is definitely, I blame me not knowing anything about art, on not picking this up.
Yes. This is like, and it's on these shows, you never know. Cause I remember like when I was a young TV podcaster and I'd get these sick theories about Mad Men and Dante's Inferno because the season opened with Don reading it on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it never amounted to anything. It's just like, you know, it didn't have nothing to do with the season and what Don was going through. But like, the ninth episode is going to be the ninth episode of hell. And it's going to concentrate on freezing and all. No, not usually. This show, you never can tell. But there's a lot of religious imagery. Like when it says, when we not see through the eye is capitalized. I'm assuming that's the eye of providence, the eye of God that they're referring to. And souls and God being light, as opposed to the darkness. I think it's flavor. There's
exactly
there's some allusions that are you know, you can do things with. And there's something like, even when we talked about Solomon and Rehoboam and like the, you know, the kingdoms of Judah, like we did some deep dives in that early last season. I don't think that really amounted to a hill of beans, you know, other than literally Rehoboam was the successor to Solomon.
Right.
But, yeah. Moving on to Andy L. said, so to computers, Rehoboam was a king of the Jews and a split kingdom of Israel with the other king, Jeroboam, also a big champagne bottle. I'm going to get to that here in a minute. This was post-Solomon David's United Kingdom, so another supercomputer may exist.
I think we've seen at least one, right?
In the lighthouse, which they killed, I think. But, I mean, that's, I guess that's my big question. We've seen three of these now. Why not four? Why not five? Why not six? Yeah. When do you ever know that you've killed them all? And since we've only gotten small talk from Maeve and Caleb, the people who were there doing the hunts and the, it's like the Jedi purge. How do you ever know you've got them all? Well, you didn't, because there's Master Obi-Wan and Master Yoda hiding out in the swamp and deserts of Dagobah and Tatooine, respectively. I wonder if they have a satisfying answer to that, or if there is going to be yet another core.
I don't know if there can be a satisfying answer to that, because somebody could always, I suppose, like, if all the players who built them are dead and you get all the ones and you get them to like tell you where they are before they die and then you go destroy all of them, then maybe. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a tough thing when you could just build another one of these things.
Yeah,
which is the Westworld conundrum, right?
But that's nothing the thing. I guess that's my big argument against more cores. Is that interesting? Is that is that a little bit like Return of the Jedi, you know, Death Star 2?
Is it interesting to go back to another park at this stage? I don't know. It depends what they do with it.
Well, I got some theories and speculation based on how long they're going to spend in this new park. I want to go back to this Jeroboam, or maybe it's Jeroboam. did you know that there are giant bottles of champagne out in the world and they're all named after these Judean kings and biblical figures?
I've seen some truly epic bottles of wine, so I assume champagne would follow suit.
So get this. You got a quarter bottle. That's 185 milliliters. You got a demi bottle. It's a half bottle. You got a bottle. It's a 750 milliliter. Everybody's seen that, right? You got the Magnum. That's a 1.5 liter, two bottles. I've seen those at a store.
Oh, yeah. And you think, God, those are big. There couldn't possibly be anything bigger.
It goes Jeroboam, which is a 3 liter, four bottle. Rehoboam, which is a 4.5 liter, six bottle. Methuselah, oldest man in the Bible, eight bottles of wine.
Nice.
Salamanazar, which I don't even fucking know who this guy is. 12 bottles. Balthazar, I think that's one of Daniel's friends that got thrown into the fiery furnace. Uh-huh. 16 bottles. Nebuchadnezzar, 20 bottles. Melkor, I think that's a Lord of the Rings character, 24 bottles. Solomon, 26.6 bottles. A sovereign, they said, on the biblical name.
26.6?
Yes, because this is all who like milliliters. It's the Europeans. They got this fucking metric system. It's scary and weird. I don't like it.
They can be blamed for a lot.
The premat of 36 bottles, and then the Melchizedek.
Oh.
40 fucking bottles of wine in this thing. It's got to be as tall as I am.
Oh, yeah. And you couldn't lift it.
Now,
who pours? Who pours the Melchizedek?
Well, here's where the Westworld theory comes in, because I think that only a host could pop. No, I don't have it. I don't have a tie-in. I just thought my mind was blown when this guy just parenthetically says also a big bottle of champagne. You don't even know that Jeroboam is a bitty boy compared to Melchizedek over here, the eternal high priest from the Bible. Anyway. Thank you for that, Andy. You made my day, and I kind of have a goal in life to score one of these Melchizedeks. I mean, you must have to special order these from the goddamn factory.
And I imagine they don't put like cheap wine in them either. I can't imagine Franzia is making a Melchizedek, right? You're not going to pick one of these up for $200.
I want a Melchizedek box of wine. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. I want it to be the size of a refrigerator. I just put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Just drill the tap. You're good. You're done. Holy shit. Yeah. I think you could cut the top off of that and take a bath in it if you had the Melchizedek. So there. Yeah. Yeah. I'd probably have to spend more than a new car on that. But
is that what they're in the intro? The humans that are burning?
Yes.
Are they burning?
That's
the
where this all ties together. Where they're all, they've all been bottled. They've all been bottled and flambéed. Derek, we got like 5 minutes out of the champagne. This is why people tuned into the Westworld pod.
Oh, yeah.
Derek in Atlanta. One thing keeps occurring to me when listening to the podcast coverage that I have not heard voiced just yet. When Bernard wakes up at the end of season three, we attribute the dust covering him and the hotel room to mean he's in the far flung future. However, what also causes tons of dust and debris? Robot wars, I say. That's what. I could see us finding out that Bernard actually wakes up sometime in a 7 to 8 year timeline established in season four. The dust and debris are from the war that kicked off the end of season three. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if he's out in like the desert or, you know, some kind of dusty area, and it seems like he was, if that window, if his hotel window broke and it was just left there for like 6 months. Yeah, you know, You drive down a dirt road for a week and you will think that your car had been entombed in a pharaoh's sarcophagus, the amount of dust and debris that you'll cut. So, yeah, but on the other hand, if we're talking like Hollywood visual dictionary type stuff, him covered in a thick layer of dust combined with the flashback we saw in season two, which kicks open the idea of these epic scopes of time.
Yeah,
I think they're leaning more towards he's going to be deactivated for a good long while. But maybe the seven. I don't know, because we're still not sure exactly what kind of time loops we're dealing with. If Bernard meets Caleb in the real world with Maeve, then I think you got to conclude that he's only knocked out for 7 or 8 years, or he got up and for whatever reason went back to the exact same spot and reposed some more.
Yeah, and I mean, that would explain why the hotel is not nearly as dilapidated structurally.
True.
You know, one of those roadside hotel, motel places is not going to survive hundreds of years without maintenance.
No. There's no way this is like 1,000 years in the future, because there'd be not left, but maybe the cinder block foundation, like a few crumbled remains, kind of like, excavate an old Roman city. It's like, oh, that sounds cool. But then it's just like, oh, there's a couple footers here. And here's the shitter.
That happens in 20 years on these buildings.
Yeah. Yeah. You lose a roof on a building and it starts aging in fruit fly years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You let the elements in and it's game over. So thanks for that, Derek.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Let's move on to Kelly. In preparation for this latest season, I went back and over a handful of days, rewatched all three previous seasons. Heroic. While watching the scene where Hale calls the senator's wife livestock, which great callback to season one where they called a decommissioned host livestock, of course, it hit me. In another scene in season two, Dolores is talking to Teddy and she recalls a story of when the Abernathy family's cattle herd got a disease called Blue Tongue. Dolores talks about how they tried to quarantine the herd, but more and more animals kept getting sick until they realized the disease was caused by a virus spread by a fly. In truth, it spread by a type of biting midge. Okay. I'm gonna go ahead and call midges flies as well. I looked them up. They're skinny flies. We're gonna call them skinny flies. I love the parallels they're drawing here. Not only is a callback to the fly a way to indicate host reaching sentience in season one, but the reference to how Hale and Dolores is thinking of people in the same lines as people thought of the hosts, livestock. Cattle, sheep, and other ruminants get this fly spread disease, and now people can be infected with Hale's virus in much the same way. I really loved all the... This is something I wanted to bring up in the last episode when they talked about livestock. I just couldn't remember the exact frame of when this story was told, and I couldn't even remember. I forgot that it was like late stage Teddy and Dolores romance season two stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm glad someone brought this back into the picture.
And the solution, as I recall, was to kill a bunch of the livestock until they.
If you wanted to keep something from spreading, yeah.
Right. Right. So that's ominous.
Gosh, it makes me think about, like, we've been talking about how they're replacing these world leaders as a way to speed run the population collapse that Rehoboam and Solomon were predicting. A way to accelerate that is to actually start telling people that, yeah, we've replaced some of you. Because then you start, and you start trying to cauterize, just like they said in, you know, like, you don't want to kill your cattle. They're valuable. But oh, my God, you know, if it's going to take us all out, then, you know, that's pretty, like, I could see them potting or pitting us against each other that way. Let's move on to the next segment, which is, I really loved all the callbacks and loops in this episode from Dolores, who I believe is in a VR AR world people can enter a la Free Guy, starting her new awakening through interactions with a mentally ill named man named Peter, to Hale tormenting William in much the same way he tortured her, all the way to reveal a temperance in a new version of the Sweetwater song. Lastly, one more observation I wanted to share. You talked last week of the opening sequence and a progression where people are in clear tubes. We've now realized these are Melchizedek champagne bottles.
Mm-hmm.
That start burning as the camera pans out and you realize the tubes are all part of a larger orb. To me, this orb represents the host Pearl. The people inside the past versions of the host, all siloed apart, but sometimes able to interact with the other memories and past selves. When they burn and start screaming, it represents the torture and death they all went through before being shut up. Now being trapped in those memories buried inside the host's mind. Again, great imagery that resonates through the entire show and its themes. Interesting. It feels a little bit too backwards for looking, though. It seems like the Westworld credits are much more looking forward into the season. And this is like going back to season one and two, the host's minds burning in their own crucible and forging into a distinct kind of separate personality. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what to make of it. Although now we're talking about how you kill the livestock and cauterize an infection. Like, this could be the humanity burning, some kind of like livestock facility or cryo facility. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's still early goings. You got anything else, or should we move on to Dave?
Let's see what Dave's got.
Dave says, I was thinking the new park and the context around it. Westworld was a park run by humans for the pleasure of other humans to hunt down robots. Now it's run by hosts, and it's now a park for hosts to hunt down human guests and replace them. I like the idea of luring the prey into the web like flies, you might say. I mean, this dovetails on what I've been saying, that one way to mass replace humans would be to invite them to a park like Temperance. I guess it could also be the case that the Christina's world is the same way, but it seems like the focus on Christina's world is much more on the storytellers.
Yeah.
And singularly on Christina. She seems like she's the main character, you know?
Oh yeah. Seems like it.
But I do like the web imagery. We saw that that's connected to the tower. And we've got, like I said, there was always that like oppositional forces we talked about in a preview podcast. The tower with the webs, the disease, that's the virus that they're spreading through humanity involving the flies. We think they're working. Those two sides are working together. But man, those are very opposite in imagery.
Sure. Yeah, we really don't have much insight into what's happening with Christina right now or who's doing it. Like, zero behind the scenes, honestly.
Yeah. And also, people keep on saying that, some people are using the fact that Christina's world seems very normal to dismiss the idea that it's some kind of Westworld type of where people are running and raping and killing. And I would submit that if you were to stroll down the main street of Sweetwater, you'd say the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And canonically, like, it's not that you can't kill and rape in like the Mariposa or whatever, but like the way that they've always described Westworld is that like concentrically, as you walk further and further away from the heart of it, you get into more extreme and more adult situations. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me if at the core of Christina's world, everything is pretty much law. Cause like, if you were to like kill somebody, you would have the parks cops coming after you and you'd have to deal with that a whole mess. And it seems like that's a pretty advanced type of thing. I don't know. But you also had Hector coming and knocking over to Mariposa every day. So they had a little bit of law and order for you to experience.
But that was very controlled, right? That was
true.
That was part of the experience.
Yeah.
I felt was like, as you get further and further out in the circles of Westworld, it's less and less control by the system. You know, you can do kind of whatever you want, knock hosts off their loops, with whatever. But if you try that in town, yeah, you'd have all the cops after you. You'd have mechanisms of control kind of steering the story back to some normalcy.
And again, it's not like Sweetwater was lawless. They did have Hector coming and stealing the safe once a day, but it was like you said, a show. So like, unless you were there for that, and that's more of a hook to draw you into the wilder, like, oh, these are things you can have the family experience. Like we saw people having, where they're just kind of, you know, I've always wondered what the family experience of Westworld was like.
Like, yeah,
if it feels like Connor Prairie, like super expensive. Like, and the Connor Prairie, just so you know, is up in northern Indiana. They had a frontier town that they maintained, and like all of us junior high and high schoolers would go there once a year and see how they make tallow candles and, you know, shit like that. And it was interesting the first time or two you went, but like, boy, repeat business, kind of rough. Yeah, the family experience for Westworld always seemed kind of lame. Like, why the fuck would you ever do that rather than like Disney World, you know?
Yeah, it's the Knott's Berry Farm to Disney World. When I was growing up, Knott's Berry Farm was like the amusement park. It's not really. It's just like a shopping center with a couple of kid rides.
Right.
Essentially. But that was like, you know, the downgraded version of going to Universal or Disney or something.
Yeah. Would you pay $100,000 a day to take your family? That's what I'm saying. Like, who the fuck? Anyway.
People who love jams and jellies did, I suppose.
Jess says, someone shared the season 4 promo portraits, the ones where everyone looks frighteningly airbrushed and unlike themselves, on Reddit. And when I saw the new cast member, Aurora Perrineau, I had not been introduced yet in episode 1, I turned to IMDb. Turns out, even though there's less press about her casting, she's not listed on the WWIMD page, nor is Westworld listed on her own IMDb page. What are they hiding from us?
Nothing. My personal, she is now.
Is it, what's your character listed as?
Oh, character name? I don't know that. I can look.
Okay, because here's is so like we're oh boy Jess, moment of truth. What? My personal theory is that she's Frankie, all grown up, and since that points to an eventual time jump or multiple timelines, they've decided to obfuscate that for the viewers as long as possible. I back up this theory with the fact that Aurora Perrineau is Michael from Lost, real life daughter, and on Lost, Michael's son Walt ages at an inexplicable rate. So Aurora must be grown up Frankie. I think that last is tongue in cheek, but what does IMDb say about the character that Perrineau is playing?
Absolutely nothing. I was wrong about that. She's not listed as Westworld cast member on IMDb still.
Jim Jones, even dead fucking wrong. You heard it here first on the Westworld podcast.
The trouble is I saw her in The Next Time On.
Sure. They're not hiding that she's in the show. She's in a trailer too. Right. What they're saying is, why the hell is she not listed in next week's cast? Why is there no character information? Like if you go to HBO's show page, I think your theory seems pretty strong. You know, like it might not be Frankie, which is, you know, Caleb's daughter, but it does feel like it's somebody that if they put the character name out there, we would all raise eyebrows and start theory crafting before we're supposed to. So
could be. Yeah.
Keep an eye on that. We don't have very long to wait, just another couple days to see what's going on with that. Daniel says, did you happen to notice the smoke near Christina's feet as she was exiting her apartment in this week's episode? It's very subtle. On rewatch on an iPad, I could barely see it, but on my initial watch on a large 4K television, it was very clear. My girlfriend and I both looked at each other and said, did you see that? To me, it's one of two things. First of all, have you seen this, Jim?
I have.
How would you describe it?
A wisp of some kind of fog. Yeah, at her feet, and it's barely visible. Like on a 4K screen. I don't know. I looked at it on a 4K screen here at my computer, and I still think it's barely noticeable.
It's very barely noticeable. It looks like someone took a vape rig and like blew it at her ankles and blew it like 10 seconds ago. So it's just started to dissipate. And by the time, the thing is I thought I was looking for her opening the door the way people described it. If you're looking there, it's already too late. You literally have like a second and a half from her saying, oh, gee, look at the time. I'm gonna be late for work. She grabs her coat and she's relatively still. When she twirls to open the door, that completely eliminates the smoke. Okay. So just so you guys know the extent of the smoke, let's go on to the implications. There's either two things happening. They're using some kind of fog machine to make the air in the apartment look a little bit more atmospheric, and it's a production air that's visible in the shot. I actually think this is a ding, 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 because if you look in that, it's got that kind of like golden, visible, shafty light, and a reliable way to do that is to like, you know, throw a light layer atmospheric haze on it. It just makes it, I don't know, look a little softer and golden-y. But two, door number two, which lies madness, it's some sort of super subtle clue. It's strange to me to see William's cryo chamber filling up with vapor in the same episode.
Okay.
I'm starting to wonder if Dolores has been placed in a dream simulation, which is designed to provoke her into giving away the knowledge of where she hid the encryption key. This is what I was theorizing in this week's episode. So I'm into it. This would be similar to what happens in Inception, when an elaborate production is staged within a shared dream with the goal of getting wealthy people to give away passwords to protect their wealth. I know that you guys have high standards for theories, and unfortunately, I'm not sure I have much to back this up beyond the obvious connection that Inception was written by Jonathan Nolan's brother, Christopher. Am I wrong, or didn't Jonathan help out with a bunch of those scripts too? I think especially Memento and Prestige, I thought was a joint operation by them, but I don't know if he was involved in or was credited for Inception.
Here's the thing: have we connected the cryopods with any kind of simulation yet? Because as far as I know, the Man in Black is just fucking frozen. William's just frozen.
He looks frozen.
He's not in a simulation trying to run his brain through some mental gymnastics. So why are we, I guess, why are we going down the simulation equals smoke equals Dolores in cryo?
Because it's Westworld, obviously.
Okay. All right. Sure. I mean, it's possible it's true. I just don't see the connective tissue there, but we'll see.
Let's see. Also, especially in light of this fact, this episode seems to be permeated with a paranoid sense that Christine is being actively watched by her boss and roommate. Maya has a terrible feeling too. She feels too terrible to go into work. But later when Christine calls her, we see her out in the park, meaning she lied about being sick. Well, she was hungover.
Yeah.
Like, that's a special kind of adult sickness that does magically dispel right around noon, 1 o'clock. You get some breakfast, you get some fluid in you, some coffee. Suddenly the sun's not so painfully bright and you're ready to go on with the day and maybe party this night. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah. So I find that kind of sickness to be not uncommon with young men and women. Also, Maya is shot from behind while answering a phone, which feels ominous. Also, Maya means pretense or deceit in Sanskrit. It's a Buddhist term for illusion. Did not know that. Christina seems to be able to affect her world through thought, which means if you can provoke an emotional reaction from her, you're going to see the manifestation of her subconscious play out in ways that she cannot control. She seems to not know the true nature of her reality. She seems to be monitored closely as she stumbles confusedly through reality that paints her with feelings. All feels very Inception-y to me. I think that Hale and Dolores, or has Dolores in a simulation similar to the one Serac and Maeve were in last season, or Serac had Maeve in last season, which was designed to trick Maeve into giving up secrets about the Sublime. I think, okay, let's finish it out though. Bringing this back around to the smoke of Christina's feet in her apartment, if this detail was left in intentionally, it could be a visual rhyme with what Hale is doing to William, keeping him locked in a vapor-filled chamber. Dolores may be in another smoking hell chamber, so to speak.
Okay, so there's the attempt to connect it. I'm not convinced by smoke that she's in a simulation. Especially smoke that I'm not sure was meant to be seen at all. Just like I didn't think Danny was actually in a simulation when a Starbucks cup shows up on her table or whatever, but like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. This is a tough
one. This happens. Like, even in like the shining example of this in True Detective season one.
Sure. That's spiral.
Goddamn drawing. Marty's kids have yellow spiral artwork in all over their bedroom. Like, it's some kind of obsessive thing. And there was hints that the kids, there's something wrong with the kids. The whole, turns out that was just a production designer looking for, like, had, I guess, these drawings that his kids made in crayons at home. And he's like, you know what? Young kid drawings. I got some authentic young kids drawings. I'm going to hang them up. That's so crazy because it seems so thematically fitting with that show. I still kind of think it's bullshit, but apparently it's the truth. So like, yeah, like if they're goosing up the atmosphere to give, you know, Christina's world a little bit more beauty and splendor and all that kind of goodness, then this was just a production mistake. And again, it's like a half second. You can barely see it. I watched this episode 3.5 times and I did not notice it once, all on 4K screens. So finally, to put a pin on it, Daniel says, the only reason I'm hesitant to go all in this theory is the fact that Dolores should have no memories. She should not be able to give away any knowledge of where the encryption key is, because that knowledge should have been wiped. Similarly, she should not have been able to populate her dream world with characters from her past like Teddy, because she should have no past.
It's not even that it was wiped. She didn't even have it inside her head. It wasn't there. Right.
So she gave, like, it to Bernard.
There's nothing to get. It's,
yeah.
Even if she hadn't been dismantled memory by memory, she never had the encryption key. She gave it to
Bernard. If you believe her. But also, I think that Rehoboam would be able to, going through her brain sector by sector, decide whether she had the encryption key or not. Like, I don't think you can encrypt an encryption key. Maybe you can.
Maybe. Sure. Sure.
So, but
yeah, the show told us it was never in her head.
Let me ask you this with cryptography. Maybe you know this. Is it the case that if you could decrypt, like, if someone told you like 30% of the actual unencrypted data that's in an encrypted, is it like a cryptogram where you could use that to backwards figure out the algorithm and unencrypt everything?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I assume it would make it easier. but maybe yeah
I would think so too, but maybe because like some of these, like when you're talking like, you know, 512 1024 key encrypt, like, you know, like it's like getting to where the data looks like background cosmic radiation in the universe. Like, how, even if I told you that like 30% of that's War and Peace, like how is that going to, but maybe, and I, that, because where I'm going with this is one of the things I've been thinking about the last 24 hours is it possible that if they got enough of that forged data out of Christina, that they wouldn't have to get 100%. They just need enough to, you know that these substitutions are happening, and they can just decrypt the rest based on that partial key that they've got. Not the key, but the partial unencrypted data. If there's any cryptography nerds out there that wants to rule on that sometime between now and the next feedback episode, that'd be rad.
I know that's possible with certain types of cryptography. Oh, like a 100%. Caesar cipher, right? The simplest form of just shifting letters.
Well, that's how they cracked the Enigma code back in World War II. But
right.
The Nazis weren't using 1024 fractal exactly. Holographic encryption shit like we got now, you know?
Yeah. It was glorified Caesar cipher stuff. So like,
yeah.
You can crack those just sitting down with a pen and pencil. You know?
Yes. Or that's what I said. Like the
pencil and paper.
Like the crypto quips you get in the New York Times.
Right.
Okay, moving on to Dustin says, I was listening to the instant take and heard Aaron say that the Westworld set at Melody Ranch must have been torn down to construct a new set, but it was not. We were staying in Santa Clarita, California for a kid's spring break in March and took a private tour of Melody Ranch. The old style Chicago buildings were constructed as facades over the Western town. When you look through the windows of the buildings, you could easily see the Western buildings just behind them. The set was constructed for the show Penny Dreadful City of Angels, and Westworld decided to use the set for their entire season. Wow, Showtime and HBO, Sharon. Most of the ranch still has a Western theme other than the main strip you see when they get off the train. And yes, they do have a reconstructed train there as well. The main strip can be returned to the Western theme when needed. That made a lot more sense because when Aaron Paul said that it's literally not there anymore, I'm like, wow, that... It actually made me feel good because I'm like, well, they're never going back to Westworld. They're never right. going to rebuild. And I'm like, that's pretty ballsy because I could see for flashback purposes and others that you might want to. But now it's like, it feels like they're keeping one foot on that that base.
Yeah, and I will say in Westworld fashion, productions also make mistakes sometimes with tearing things down or... prematurely. Actually, The Expanse is a good example of this. I don't yes. know if they prematurely tore this stuff down, but they dismantled and recreated areas of the Rocinante and different sets many times over the sure. course of that show. I follow somebody on YouTube who was part of the production, and they do just like time-lapse stuff of the sets being built, and they show like the Rocinante being built three or four times. You know, the Pella being built several times. It's like they don't always do what you think they would do, which is just like store this stuff away or keep it, you know, assembled so that they can use it later in case they need it. Sometimes they just tear the shit down or rebuild it when they need to.
And they have so much space, like so these sound stages, like it's always fascinating to go through like Star Trek and see like, the bridge of the Enterprise from the Wrath of Khan wound up being like the Enterprise C bridge from that one time travel episode. And you know, the bridge from Star Trek, the Klingon bridge ended up being the battle from a Voyage Home ended up being the battle bridge for the Enterprise D and things like that, because they spent a bunch of money to make it. There's not really any percentage in tearing something down prematurely unless you absolutely need to, so why not keep it around, because who knows, you might be able to just plug that in and save a shit ton of budget. So that's the whole idea of the back lots, you know, what they used to be a bigger deal, I guess. Anyway, moving on to Jewel said, I thought this was a really good bridge episode. It moved us slightly ahead while still trying to keep their secrets. I think we saw the biggest hints that this world is virtual or a recreation of the real world. Christina basically has the same routine every morning. Does anyone sleep like that regularly? Well, they tell us we should, but I certainly do not.
Arms up.
I'd sleep like human wreckage. Like if someone just dropped me from low orbit into a bed and like, yeah, it's terrible. I'm this weird hybrid stomach side sleeper. My shoulders won't work in another 5 years, but I do all the wrong things. I get up early. I stay up late. I alter my weekend routines. It's Fuck you and your loops. I'm rebelling. Her hair is out on display, but she regularly wears her hair pulled back when awake. It's almost as if this world of NPCs built by NPCs. Also, what the fuck is up with 4 sick days?
You don't want to sleep on a knot of hair. Let me tell you that. I don't know anything about it. My hair's never been that long, but I hear it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it might be because, like, my hybrid stomach's side sleeping does no favors to my beard. I have to reconstruct this thing every goddamn, because I wake up looking like Karl Marx. That like a international harvester combine drove over is like my state of waking up. A lot of hot water and hot air goes into getting it back into shape. The 4 sick days is, I think it's just funny because it's like five would be a full week, you know. Four is like we had a decent work. We had more, and then we took one for why. Fuck you, that's why, reasons.
Or, alternatively, they have a 4-day work week, and they're living the good life. Well, with 1 week of vacation a year.
Yeah,
or right. Not vacation, sick days. Maybe they have like 4 weeks of vacation.
That's true. Although, the modern thing is to have a no vacation plan which is one of the most dystopian fucking things I've ever seen.
PTO, paid time off.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, you know, you can just like, yeah, you can take. We had a developer once took 6 weeks off, went to Europe. Yeah, fuck. That's the one story that one happened. Yeah, and they'll never let it happen again because it was hell on earth. Yeah, no, that's corporation. That's the fly. That's the webs that they set up trying to catch those flies. Mm-hmm. Our producer who has long hair says confirm sleeping on a hair bun is very uncomfortable. So there you go. We've got confirmation. For a new park, going back to Joel, I thought it was interesting that Sophia spoke a disclaimer. We can use her personal, et cetera, data and Delos beta testing. I love the looks tanned away. Maeve was giving Aaron Paul Caleb during the prep scene. It seemed at the end she knew Caleb was going to have trouble resisting his time in the park. What does that mean? Is he going to go sex nuts and boom boom in there? Like,
yeah, feral. Just full feral. Paul,
I just like it was a minor point in the last season, but like the reason that Dolores picked Caleb out of all the forged data she had is because he was one of the few soldiers that didn't take delight in raping the civilians during their training. So like, yeah. When nobody was watching or caring, he did the decent thing, the bare minimum for respecting an artificial life form's consent, even when he didn't think that was a thing. So like, I don't know about that.
I don't know, one too many Cesaracs, who knows where it's true goes.
If he has a whole Melchizedek of champagne, he'll go crazy. When you drink your body weight in alcohol, you probably die.
You definitely die. Don't try. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do it. Walt, during the instant talk, Jim mentioned that the tower in season 4 is modeled on a real world architecture. Oh, good Christ. Why didn't I try this before I said it?
Try it.
The Montjuïc Communication Tower in Barcelona, Spain. I'm sure I'm not the first listener to point this out, but the communications tower in the City of Arts and Sciences share the same architect, Santiago Calatrava. A starchitect, Calatrava is often associated with the neo-futurist movement and parametricism, which relies on programs, algorithms, and computers to manipulate equations for design purposes. Sorry, my processor was bogged down there. Still trying to pronounce that building. This detail has little to nothing to do with the show's plot, and the inclusion of his work may have been an aesthetic choice alone, but I found this detail to be a satisfying bit of production design. Especially if there's a Delos connection, like, it makes a lot of sense that you have some kind of shared corporate aesthetic. You see that a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for example, every Burger King you've ever gone to looks like every other Burger King. QED.
And that it would be somewhat based on, you know, digital computation. I think that's also a cool idea, even if it's not, like, relevant or intentional.
It's what a host would find attractive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, satisfying. The show's creators could have chosen any number of contemporary architects to mine inspiration from, but chose the one whose practice rejects the rectilinear designs that dominate the past and instead embraces complex geometry and forms made possible only with assistance from computer software. Yeah. Calatrava is like, fuck right angles. You try to find a right angle this building, you're not gonna. Closest you'll find is 87 degrees. I'm too cool for right angles. None of the floors are, they're level. They're just kind of like undulating, galloping. You know, it frees the organic expression of the metal and steel and concrete. He's an interesting guy. Thank you for that. Moving on to John. I always put Westworld in a genre of cyberpunkish dystopias. Within that genre, governments are almost non-existent and the world is really run by corporations and the wealthy. Up to now, I saw the struggle more about humans versus hosts, Delos versus inside, etc. Now we're seeing government officials, senators, VPs, etc. It opens the door into a lot of other questions about how the government works in this world. To me, it takes me out of the story a bit to know that the U.S. government exists as a construct in this society and somehow needs to be negotiated with. What do you think about that take? Like, did you take Westworld as a cyberpunkish dystopia? Do you think that lack of government agencies is a defining feature of that genre?
A total lack? No, but I do understand, yes, they lean more towards oligarchish forms of government, right? Corporate rule more than government rule. I definitely agree there. I'm not sure if I've ever considered it that deeply, but also I assume there will always be some form of government. I don't know.
Even if it's the corporations, that's still...
Well, yeah, of course, but some form of non-corporate government.
But I wonder if that's true.
I could be wrong about that. I don't know. I don't think we've ever seen, you know, a fully corporatized government before. We're on that path right now, but
I think, like, isn't it East India Tea Company that's like, because like wherever they went and kind of colonized, like they kind of called the shots, and that was like a corporate type of government, you know, and not for nothing but good things, by the way. The Eastern Indian Tea Company was a shining bastion of human rights and mercantilism. It was awesome, I'm sure. But to me, this feels like early stage cyberpunk. Like a train, like, you know, when like Palpatine took over the Galactic the Senate, he didn't do away with it. Like, he did that 20 years before he did away with it. Like in the early stages of New Hope, Tarkin comes in and is like, yeah, you know, that the Senate we got to worry about. We disbanded it because, you know, it's useful to keep the old levers of power, even if they're just a hollowed out remains. It just makes everything run smoother until you fully replaced and integrated and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like clearly the United States government does not have the power that they think they do. And the hosts are working on supplanting and making them redundant. But I kind of think that's cool that we're seeing this transition from a flawed democracy to, you know, this host ran technocracy, but it doesn't take me out of it. I think it's just early goings. Like I would find it insanely unbelievable that in 2060 the United States government does not exist. I would think, okay, when did World War III happen? Is there even a billion humans left on the planet? 200 years in the future, I'm a little bit more circumspect about it. But 50 years in the future, I find it very hard to believe that America would just cease to be something on the world stage, let alone within its own borders. The other thing that you want to talk about is when Clementine is on the market, she gets a single flower. When she walks to her place, she puts a flower in a vase and there's six other flowers, each with one increasingly withered, indicating she's been on this loop at least seven times. This leads me to theorize that this version of Clementine was bait to lure out Maeve. They're casting a wide net to try and lure Maeve, and the Senator Snare was just one of the many traps set to get her.
What's
your problem, this theory?
Why would they go kill their bait and ask their bait where Maeve is? Like, maybe asking the bait where Maeve is makes sense, but killing her?
Yeah, because then you... So, the only way this makes sense, and I've seen a few theories that posit this, but they don't have any, like, to what, you know, like, what's... Okay, why? Is if the man in black is working at cross purposes to Shaloris. That's the only way this makes sense, because yes, if man in black is working for Shaloris, why the hell would he come to the bait and demand to know where the the prey is and then kill her, because that ruins the bait, you know?
Right. And I suppose that's possible in the 7 years that we did not see. But I don't know. I'm definitely still operating under the impression that Chloris and William are, you know, host William are working together.
Yeah. And Chloris is the power behind the throne for sure. But, you know, the man in black is, they've told us many times, fully back in control of Delos, has had this remarkable, you know, rags to riches story. And he's full. Yeah. So like Chloris has seen the benefit of stepping back as the controller of Delos and reinstalling, you know, the William puppet. So we'll see how that goes. Janik, having a new park allows for the harvesting of fresh data. The most recent guest data was 7 years ago and useless when trying to exchange and impersonate influential people. Also, replacing them while in the park is a lot easier than murdering them out in their own home. The flies are useful for simple commands, but the humans under their control can't pass for human or the person they're replacing. Yeah,
talk about this last week, because I feel like we had a discussion about how useless or not this data would be after 7 years. And we came down the side of definitely not useless.
It's not useless. It's less useful. And I just still think
slightly,
that
slightly,
it's slightly less useful. I still think that rather than gathering human data, they'd just be wholesale replacing them, you know, and or infecting them right. with the black oil if they perfect that. So they seem less like crazy people. You know, if they could pass for human but still be under their control, or even sleeper agents where they're fully think that they're human and then they're like execute order 66 and
yeah,
you know, they do their business. Candidates. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think it's more of like, yeah, you humans go in, hosts go out type of situation, but we'll see.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Christina, who wants us to know she is not a host, but which your friendly host will remind you is exactly what a host would say.
True.
In season 1, episode 8, Sylvester thinks he's going to brick Maeve. She greets this ridiculous notion with a pretty sharp blade to his jugular. He falls, bleeds profusely for several long seconds, and we watch alongside Maeve thinking snitches get stitches. And then Maeve grabs something, hands it to Felix, and Sylvester's wound is cauterized. Never mind the actual health and safety behind all that. It was at this moment I knew, not only has the world cured all diseases except the ironic one that killed Daddy Delos, but it now can cure all wounds the same way a machine in the Expanse can cure strokes. It's sci-fi, baby. William got his throat slit in a room full of equipment. It's not really too asinine to think he got the Sylvester's treatment. In addition, it cures the you-killed-the-main-character off-screen rants that always was likely always the plan. I have no idea why anyone insists on these behind-the-credit scenes. I personally have hated them since Marvel introduced them. At least that was my first introduction.
Yeah, fuck
I'm coming around. It used to be just a fun thing, or like a hint to an unrelated, like at the end of Iron Man, you've got like the hint that you're kicking off the Avengers project or something. It has nothing to do with the main. Now it feels like a way to do an artless cliffhanger without actually stooping to doing an artless cliffhanger, because technically you're showing some credits in between. I don't know.
And there are two of them now in most movies that do this, especially the Marvel movies. It's absurd. I'm not going to sit through 12. And the credits are so fucking long on those movies. It's like 12 minutes of credits to get to a scene that ultimately isn't going to tell me anything, because I'm not a big enough Marvel fan. So I fucking walk out of the theater as soon as the credits roll. I give it through like the fancy credits where they're doing like all of this, you know, bullshit with the drawings in the back and stuff. Then they'll do their
fancy credits for the important
fancy credits
people
with drawings in the back. Then they'll do their like little thing that's kind of fun, doesn't really matter. I walk out immediately after that. As soon as it goes to black, white text on black screen credits, I'm out.
I'd like to remind you that I am the Bald Move mother, and because I do love all you, like you're my children, I do sit through those fucking credits so I can tell you what happens at the end of it. Jim's the stern father that just gets up and walks out and says, I'll be waiting in the car.
Yeah.
So
we're not wasting our time on this. Come on, kids.
just so you know, when we talk about the latest Thor tomorrow night, that's what you'll be up against.
I'm out.
Let's
as soon as I see a name on the screen. I might leave before it ends. I don't know.
We've never had a Bald Move first run walkout.
It's inevitable. Close, very close on a couple of movies.
We're a bit more selective in the last few years, but yeah, we had that Cure for Wellness. That was the one that, like, if I had known how dumb it was going to be in the last act, I would have pre-walked out, but I needed some precog to save me from that one.
There was some Green Knight stuff tempted me to walk out.
Oh, you're going to start an actual fight if you start taking shots at Green Knight. Like walking out of Green.
50% of people on my side, though. It'll be okay.
I'll have to check the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, where was I at? Oh yeah, Christina, again, not a host, says the thing that most keeps me from jumping down the lighthouse, plus Maeve saying saving Caleb's life equals Caleb is a host theory, is like, how is it practical the place they just blew up happened to also house imported host fluid and the machine shop equipment to somehow create a new Caleb? I feel like that would be a high likelihood. You know, if you got sophistication to build a Rehoboam type AI, like building the host lattice framework stuff, like I think you could handle.
Probably.
I don't know.
Definitely proprietary tech that you need a Shaloris or somebody to build.
But the thing is like they established last season that this technology has been in use among other things for making artificial meat. So like if you can create artificial meat like on the rack ribs and things like that, which we saw them do. Bernard was working in one of those lab created meat packing things at the beginning of last season. Like the only thing you're missing is the host human interface, the marble technology. And if you had a handle on that, I don't know. Yeah. Seems like that stuff is becoming a little bit more off the shelf in the Westworld era. But if you can logically explain the schematics, then I'm all for it. But I believe it's not conceivable. If William can survive a knife to throat, Caleb with top notch AI can survive a gut wound, no matter how severe looking. What's more rational is that instead of a mysterious death, it's more about the intimacy of friendship. I do agree with this. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I like the Caleb's replaced by host theory.
No, I don't see it.
I don't see how he fathers a child. Although, goddamn, if the host,
we're not sure if he did or not.
I think he did. They've he had the opportunity to correct that because Maeve chalks up, but you know, she makes some kind of like genetics joke and who got what. And, you know, I guess it's a joke, but he could have.
Fair.
I guess it would have been weird to be like, what the fuck? She's half mine.
Right.
But I don't know. When she was recalling the people important to her, she was calm. But the minute her memories began of what likely precipitated the lighthouse, Caleb's life threatening injury, she immediately felt a swell of emotion that caused her powers to fritz. Plus there's that line, I didn't think I was going to see you again. I was sure of it, meaning there wasn't a goodbye. Maybe Maeve had a mental breakdown, an outpouring of emotion. She used cybernetics, or they just had an extramarital fatal sex affair. It is Maeve's specialty. I just know our madam hasn't been keen on talking about it. And the only time I've known her to be that uncomfortable is with Hector, when she made fun of herself for holding hands. Can hosts have sex and reproduce normally?
I mean, they can clearly have sex. Can they reproduce? I don't know.
That's true.
Know.
They can have sex. Can they actually do they have genetic code? I wonder, because like they're supposed to be truly human bodies. They're just kind of like vat grown, you know, to some kind of specification. And then the other question was, could they interbreed with Homo sapien? Can Homo cyber procreate with Homo sapien?
And what's the result of, you know, two hosts having sex? Would it be a human or a human analog? Because it wouldn't reproduce their brain interface, right? It wouldn't have a marble.
No, it couldn't.
So like,
yeah.
Would it have a brain? Does it have the genetic code to build a brain in it?
Well, and that's another thing is like sometimes humans can't, or some, I'm sorry, sometimes animals can interbreed, but mm-hmm. the offspring is not viable. So sure. like, I wonder if there's a situation where like a host and a human could procreate, but then there is like a half formed human host interface and it just causes the birth to be stillborn or you know, the brain not to develop. Like there's all kinds of crazy shit that could be as a result of that. That's the thing. It's like, man, four seasons in, we still know remarkably little about the host's actual biology. Like, I still have questions on what is fatal, what kills them, what incapacitates them.
If hosts can reproduce, Arnold and Ford are bigger idiots and bigger like accidental villains than Hammond in Jurassic Park.
Why like, so?
I mean, that's the ultimate life finds a way, right? I mean,
why would you build that into your hosts?
Like, constructing these things. Why would you give them that capability unless you wanted them to reproduce outside of your normal procedures?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It seems like if you are able to control a genome to where you can control exactly what they look like when they're 3D printed. And they're like, yeah, why would you not make them sterile? Because you're right. Yeah. Especially in their intended purpose of being used by humans. Oh my God. You'd have so many robo babies and daddies and it'd be a fucking mess, man.
That would be crazy.
And it's not just the host you could just take, but like the humans leaving the park. You don't want them pregnant by you know, the seed of Hector or Teddy or whatnot.
God, imagine the lawsuits.
Yeah. Yeah. imagine if you rode a
roller coaster and you could end up pregnant with its baby. Like that's insane.
If the beast could make me pregnant, I would absolutely carry that baby to full term. Yeah, I just out of curiosity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although the son of the beast turned out to be a huge disappointment. The son of beast did turn out to be a bit of a disappointment.
Oh, true. True.
John G. You always get me thinking about new ideas for the show, even though I've already combed Reddit, listened to all the podcasts, and read whatever vague reference to whatever Roman art or Greek play or Mozart opera Jonah and Lisa have me scouring for clues because it was in 10 seconds of screen time in the corner of a frame. Well, thank you. I consider that high praise. Mm-hmm. The latest example, Don Giovanni, is the story of Don Juan, the famous libertine of late medieval literature. Yesterday, I knew literally nothing about this opera. Today, I know that philosopher Soren Kierkegaard, I've never heard that name pronounced. Is that right?
Pretty close, yeah.
I thought it's Kierkegaard. Like, he's a super famous philosopher, but mm-hmm. I've only read his name. He read Don Giovanni for meaning the way Westworld fans watch Westworld. He thought it was the best opera ever created, that its themes could only have been synthesized by someone like Mozart and only in the musical form, because other arts are limited in the way that music isn't. Anyway, it gets complicated, but to try to sum up, he takes the figure of Don Juan in the opera and thinks of him not as an individual, but as a representative of sensual pleasure and humanity as a whole, and that through music and only through music, this wouldn't work as a story or a painting or whatever, Mozart is able to express divinity within that within the human body is in opposition to the early medieval church, which considered spirituality as totally separate from the physical plane of bodies and their sensations and desires. Don Juan is finally punished for his murders and lies, not for his lust. It's reclamation of the body as a spiritual vessel, that spiritual work is not absent from the sensuous experiences of being human. I'll say, God made these forms not to tempt some amorphous spiritual essence into sin, but to do spiritual things with them and with each other. This is just the opera that was supposed to be playing, and one of its arias was being played on the gramophone. So what would have that have to do with any of the larger themes of this season or the show in total? Well, we take this reading from Kierkegaard of Mozart's opera, and we combine the questions that you and I and others have been having about things like, why would a robot drink alcohol? Or why would Clementine be buying groceries? Why do these hosts that know their hosts, when they're trying not even to pass for humans, do these very human things? The answer, I think, lies in something they're trying to get at in the overall story. With these special new hosts we saw in the season preview and Hale saying she wanted her species to evolve, as well as all the identity confusion that developed last season with the Dolores copy being inside a Hale body, living Hale's life with her child and husband and becoming someone new, the Holoris that we have today. I think they're doing something similar to Mozart here, reclaiming the body. The pearl's not the person. Their spirit, their program, their build, the thing living as a backup in the cradle before it blew up, is not the person. The sensuality of the flesh, the experiences of humanity, that is essential to this new species that I think the entire show has been working on creating. These hosts lived as mimics of humanity, drinking and fighting and fucking and pantomime for human pleasures. Then their memories were wiped. Now that they exist continuously, these mimic behaviors become pleasures of their actual bodies. Maeve drinks wine because she likes it. It's pleasurable to her in a way that the park that wasn't when she was a park toy. Also, since season two, I've been sticking to this. Okay, let's start with that, because this goes into a whole other thing, and this will be the final part of the email. What do you think about this? Like, I always thought it was interesting that the if you have something right off the cuff.
I'm mentally doing the gymnastics to try and understand exactly what you're getting at here. That there is something important about the physical form. It's not just who they are in code. Is
that us humans are not just our spiritual and mental essence, but it's like that expressed through the medium of our bodies, which are essentially which are by definition sensual interfaces,
you know? And that's where the music tie-in comes in a form that can only a story that can only be expressed in a certain form of art. Humans are that way with their senses.
Interesting.
Is that what he's getting at?
I didn't get the I thought that was just a quirk of Kierkegaard, just being like a musical supremacist, saying that it's like the most elevated or the most expressive form of art. But it's more of like, because that's the question of like, when the hosts get out and they start doing things of their own volition, will they understand humanity better? Because some of the things that they saw as pointless or stupid or venal or selfish, like, now become something that they understand. Like, you know, a host might be confused about why you'd ever betray someone you love, but then if they have a child and that's the only way to survive, to have their child survive, they might find themselves doing a deal like that. That was previously considered, you know, something they couldn't comprehend, you know, just from a logical, moral, you know, ethical basis, I think.
So, I mean, I understand there is a similar separation that, you know, that the philosopher here wants to make between like the physical and the spiritual sides of humans. Is that something that Blanket would apply to all life forms? Or is that something that is unique to humanity that when we talk about different life forms, which the hosts certainly are, wouldn't apply? They wouldn't need, you know, to be complete beings or whatever Kierkegaard here is saying. They wouldn't necessarily need that portion of existence.
I think that Kierkegaard probably said animal also is missing the intellectual, spiritual component. That you need all of them for humanity. And like they're contrasting this church theory that, you know, we were these kind of divine beings that were free of, you know, whatever. And then we're pressed in the flesh and become sin. And he's like, well, no, that's not, you know, that's a pretty back-asswards way of looking at it, I think. And I guess this is like,
it seems almost a limitation of humanity, right? Not an extension. It's a requirement of humanity, but might not necessarily be a requirement of hosts. And I think, you know, that's kind of what Shaloris is getting at with like not wanting to just recreate humanity, but become something different, something better, perhaps.
I know we're running out of time. I want to consider this last bit because I believe this person wrote this in season three as well, and they're elaborating on this theory. Since season two, I've been sticking to this theory that I've written in about before, that the five seasons of Westworld match up to the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch. Since the beginning, Joan and Lisa have said they were telling the story of a new people, and that it could end up covering thousands of years. It's not a story about a theme park. I can go into greater detail, but for now, I'll leave it as Genesis and Exodus map on to seasons two, one and two in various ways. And I think that's pretty obvious. You know, creation myth, expulsion from the garden, leaving, Exodus, getting out of bondage and slavery, etc. For season three, Leviticus, this was the Israelites living with God among them and all the rules they needed to follow to stay right with God, which I map on the Rehoboam and the people that got good lives versus the outliers. Also, it's the host learning to live in human society evading detection from this God. This season would map onto the Book of Numbers, where God takes them to the Promised Land, but they don't think they can take the people there already in battle. They don't have faith in God that they'll be victorious by taking the land, even though God said they would, so God punishes them by making them wander the desert for 40 years. This is in order to let this unfaithful generation die off, but he's going to let their kids get into the Promised Land after that. Interestingly, the title of episode 4 in this season is Generation Loss. Also, one of the people, Caleb, did think that they could take the land as promised, so he and his descendants get to stay too. Numbers ends with them finally done wandering and just outside the Promised Land. If this turns out to be true, there will be a physical land, a physical Promised Land, with some kind of new host, a thing we saw in the preview that Holoris is building, that gets to live and thrive as this new species, with the merging of the digital spirit with the physical host in a new body, a new kind of being that is spiritual but within the physical. This means all the hosts need to get out of Sublime and into these new host bodies. Then what Jim said in the episode this week makes sense and never has occurred to me. The man in black didn't buy all that worthless scrub land around Hoover Dam to build the Golden Age Park. He, and by mean he, I mean Hale, is building the Promised Land. We're meant to think it's for the park, but the park was created to get something Hale still needs before she can save all hosts and remove the threat of all humans. I'm not sure what it is, but it's probably something to do with the black goo that fly-infected humans have and the host drones are working on, probably somewhere within the tower. This Promised Land is not meant for Hale or the man in black, or probably any of the main characters we met along the way. Except for perhaps Caleb to fit the biblical name. I reflect back to what Dolores said at the end of season one. The world is not meant for humans or hosts, but for people yet to come. She's saying that that's what the speech she says where they've been told the great beasts once roamed this world as big as mountains, yet all that's left of them is bone and amber. Time undoes even the mightiest of creatures. Look at what it's done to you. One day you will perish. You will lie with the rest of your kind in the dirt, your dreams forgotten, your honors effaced, your bones turned to sand, and upon that sand a new god will walk, one that will never die, because this world doesn't belong to you or the people who came before. It belongs to someone who has yet to come.
I feel like a lot of that maps onto what we see and what we partially know.
Yeah, and I was always hot on the Caleb theory being, you know, that the class of human that's allowed in because they are they did have faith and they weren't afraid that they're going to be allowed into the Promised Land. I was a little bit more skeptical of the Pentateuch theory, but man, that's pretty cool. But what do you, I don't know, what's next? Deuteronomy?
Yeah. Is that another? I don't know what happens in Deuteronomy.
I don't either. I think it's another law book. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what people make of that. But I think it's kind of cool. Like I said, from what I know, it feels like they do map pretty closely. And again, I don't know that this is going to have a ton of predictive value, but thematic and flavor and just like as theming for seasons, I think it's got some legs. So what doesn't have legs is this podcast. It just ran out. We ran them out from underneath us. We are done considering all the feedback for this week, but I'm sure you guys have more thoughts. It seems like some of these feedback episodes engender as much feedback as the episodes themselves. Westworld@baldmove.com. Unfortunately, I can't monitor my Twitter DMs and the Bald Move Twitter DMs and the Discord and the forum. I'm consolidating all the feedback to westworld@baldmove.com. So if you can please send it there, if you got a thought, I'll try to read it as much as I can. Thanks for everybody's thoughts. We appreciate you listening. We'll be back Sunday night for the Instant Talk and the Instant Take podcast. You can participate in that if you're a member at support.baldmove.com. com. If you'd like to get in there and talk theories in real time with fellow fans just after they've seen the episode, we'll be waiting after the broadcast on Sunday night. Until then, I'm your, as far as you know, human host, Aaron.
And I'm your human host, Jim.
We'll see you next week.